Welcome to the 107th episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Rutherford. Stay tuned for my interview with Jasper Ford, author of the innovative Thursday Next series of novels. The latest Thursday Next novel, The Woman Who Died a Lot, was recently published. Stay tuned for the interview with Jasper Ford. Jasper, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
First, I wanted to see if you could read the first page or two of your new novel, The Woman Who Died a Lot.
Everything comes to an end. A good bottle of wine, a summer's day, a long-running sitcom, one's life, and eventually our species. The question for many of us is not that everything will come to an end, but when, and can we do anything vaguely useful until it does? In the case of a good bottle of wine, probably not much, although the very act of consumption might make one believe otherwise. A well-laid summer's day should not expect too much of itself either, and sitcoms never die. They simply move to a zombie-like existence in rerun heaven. Of the remaining two, the end of one's life and that of our species, regular subscribers to my exploits will recall that I have seen myself die a few years back, and given my past record, it was probable that much useful work would be done between then and now. As to the end of our species, the possibility of annihilation was quite real, well documented, and went by the unimaginative title of Asteroid HR6984. Whether the human race managed to figure out a worthwhile function for itself in the 37 years until possible collision was dependent upon its level of optimism. But it wasn't all bad news. In fact, due to a foible of human nature that denies us the ability to focus on more than one threat at a time, the asteroid was barely news at all. HR 6984's convenient lack of urgency and its current likelihood of hitting the Earth at only around 34% had relegated it well past such front-page news as the stupidity surplus and the current round of fiery cleansings by an angry deity. Instead, the hurtling lump of space debris was consigned to pop culture damnation on page 12, sandwiched somewhere between guinea pig accessorizing and the apparent relevant eating habits of non-celebrities.
Great. Well, if someone hasn't read a Thursday Next novel before, how would you describe the series? And more specifically, how would you describe your new book, The Woman Who Died a Lot?
Oh, my goodness. This would take quite a while. I think essentially they're very difficult to explain, but that isn't helpful. I suppose the broad conceit of them is that it's about a woman named Thursday Next who works for a policing agency inside of the book world. The book world being this world behind the printed page where all the characters of all the books that have ever been written, when they're not being read themselves, are off duty and have a bit of mischief on their minds. And she is tasked to make sure that books stay as the author intended and don't sort of like variance to that. That's pretty much what the series is about, but it tends to jump around all over the place. The Woman Who Died a Lot, the latest in the series, because my heroine Thursday Next has a family life as well in her version of the United Kingdom. Occasionally we come back and deal with domestic troubles at home, which are always of a slight absurd and eccentric nature. And that's what pretty much happens in The Woman Who Died a Lot.
Great. Well, the Thursday Next novels are obviously metafiction. They're books about books, and more specifically, books about characters and plots of many well-known books. Despite the obvious love for story and literature that comes through in your novels, I understand from previous interviews that the first book in the series was rejected numerous times by publishers. I'm curious, why do you think there was such a resistance to the series, especially among an audience of editors who love books and reading?
Who knows? I mean, there's two schools of thought here. I mean, firstly, that I spent a great deal of time writing the book. I think it probably took about 7 years from, completing it for the first time and then to actually getting it published. And there's a lot of rewriting in between. So it might be simply that it actually got good enough because I'd been rewriting and, teaching myself the craft because I had no published book before this. That's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it would be that here was a book being submitted to mainstream publishers that had Jane Eyre in it, that also had time travel, werewolves, a vampire, alternative history, science fiction, was clearly a fantasy novel, and also had an interesting digression on the authorship of the Shakespeare plays. Now, that is a heady broth for someone to take in. And for the most part, all those rejections, no one ever read it. They just read the précis. And of course, if you read the précis for a book like that, you go, well, this is complete nonsense and it can't possibly work, especially if it's, you know, if it's the 90s. So I just managed to get an agent eventually who read the book, read the whole thing, and then could actually go to an editor and say, listen, I know this sounds bad. I can't paraphrase it. Just read it. I promise you, you'll like it. And that's how I got published.
Great. Well, prior to writing the first book in the Thursday Next series, had you written more conventional novels or thrillers? And what was the process that led up to you writing the first Thursday Next novel?
No, I mean, it was the third novel I'd written. I wrote seven when I was trying to be published, seven over 11 years. The first two in the series were two books I now have published, which the first one was a police procedural with Humpty Dumpty as the victim called The Big Over Easy. That's published. And the second one was another police procedural, but this time it was a sort of retelling of Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you know, Goldilocks being an enigmatic blonde who goes missing. And they're kind of both mystery thrillers, but obviously explaining away you know, the backstory of the nursery rhymes, which at the time when I first wrote them, 1993-94, and were published in 2005-2006, was actually quite sort of relatively original. Now I think a lot of people are doing similar things. But the sort of central conceit of those two books, which was kind of looking at characters within fiction and then sort of clothing them with new situations, unusual situations, was kind of similar to the first next book. So I don't really do serious books. I just do sort of absurdist fantasy kind of weird stuff.
Gotcha. What's the process like for you when you sit down to write a new novel? Do you plot it out before you start writing the first page?
No, not at all. No, I can't do that whole plan thing. I find most of all of my ideas really come on the hoof. It's actually when I'm writing down, I go, right, okay, we're going to start off with two people, you know, and they're in a train, and where are they going and why? And then you go, well, they're clearly going for this, but why are they doing this? And you go, well, they must be doing that. And then, but if they're doing that, surely, you know, X is involved. The X is involved. How would Y feel about that? And before you know it, because this is a series book, everything just starts slotting into place. And then I just have ideas, and I think, well, that'd be fun. You know, why don't we do this? Why don't we have that? And I just start writing. And then I rewrite it constantly, obviously, because I'll get to, 50,000 words in. And then I have a great idea, and I go, aha, brilliant, but I've got to rewrite the whole book. And I go, right, straight back, rewrite, and then kind of rewrite the whole book again. So I just rewrite and rewrite and rewrite and add and rewrite and then delete and rewrite again. And after about 110 days, which is usually what it takes me, over the space of about 7 months, a book emerges in a sort of, I suppose you'd, if I was trying to be highfalutin, I'd say in an organic fashion, but I think it's probably more fungal, to be honest.
Well, do you have in mind before you start writing or as you're thinking ahead in terms of specifically the Thursday Next novels, do you have in mind particular genres or types of novels that you would want to include in the novel itself?
I have vague ideas where it wants to go. You know, if I'm thinking, you know, at the beginning of a book a while back, I think it was Something Rotten. I thought, I haven't done Western for a while, so why don't I do Western? So the first chapter was Thursday, and a couple of the other members of Jurisfiction, this policing agency inside the book world, and they were chasing the Minotaur who's escaped across the Western genre. So they just sort of march into all these Western towns. And they've actually darted him with slapstick. So they're actually chasing the Minotaur across the Western genre, looking for outbreaks of custard pies in faces and, you know, saucepans in the face. So it's that kind of idea. You know, I think, well, you know, what can I do? What can I use? How can I use it? What's really unusual? What's the sort of random aspect to it that I think would be quite fun? And how would it fit into the story as a whole? So it's really just sort of, you just sit there and kind of think up bizarre ideas that kind of work, and then just start running with them.
Gotcha. And what has been the reception? I mean, obviously the books are bestsellers now, but what has been the reception specifically among booksellers and librarians who tend to be, you know, obviously devoted book lovers themselves?
Very strong. Librarians in particular are hugely sort of supportive of my writing, because a lot of it covers classical characters and classical books, which they like a great deal. But librarians, you know, are in the job because they love books and they love stories. And I tend to sort of think of the Thursday Next series as how I describe it is stories for people who love books, books for people who love stories, you know, a celebration of story, if you like, in the way that we tell them, the way we write them, the way we punctuate them, the way we print them even. And it's just really a sort of nice, broad, sort of slightly comedic and wry look at the publishing world. And of course, like librarians, as like booksellers, they love books. So it's a funny book about books.
Great.
So I think that's why they like it.
Well, given your career to date, what advice would you have for listeners who are aspiring writers and want to write and publish their own novels?
Oh, I see. The first thing I say is think long term. In general, to get published, in the sort of classical way. I mean, you could of course publish whatever you wanted tomorrow. You could slap together 100,000 words and you could publish it, e-publish it tomorrow. Whether it's going to be any good or not, of course, is another thing. So whether it's going to sell is obviously based on quality. Forget about marketing and publicity. Quality is what sells. Always remember that. It's quality. It's not, you know, the Facebook. It's not the tweet. It's not the gimmick. It's not this. It's quality. That's what sells books. It's good stories. Good characters, well told. So I would say think long term is a very important thing. For the most part, I've found that most authors get published or are accepted to be published on their seventh book after about 10 or 11 years. That is pretty much normal. That is learning one's craft. I think that's about it does seem to be about writing. That might be disheartening, but this is about writing quality. And I thought my first book, when I first wrote it, was good enough to be published. But it was only when I came to rewrite it for publication 14 years later that I could easily see its shortcomings. So think long term. Be a merciless self-critic is very important. You want to reread it, and if you think, yeah, that's all right, it's not. If you think, there's something wrong here, I don't know what it is, and then you stare at it and you move something around and you go, it's still not right. Listen to that voice that says it's not right, it's not working. You know, read it aloud. I mean, there's a lot to be said for reading stuff aloud. But it's a hard one, and you've got to learn to be the best editor you have, because there's no one else who's going to, you know, say whether it's good or bad or indifferent except yourself. It's difficult now with e-publishing, because I think what happens is a lot of people are so eager to be published that they just publish their first novel, and then they get disheartened when they have 9 downloads all from the family and give up. And of course, you know, I think that's very disheartening, because they shouldn't give up. You shouldn't give up because you just, maybe you're not ready yet. You know, maybe it was really just a first draft, you know, to be brutally honest. And I think really, if you want to really get to be a professional writer, of course, if you just want to publish a book, that's quite different. But if you want to be a professional writer who will carry on selling books and increase in sales in books, it's got to be good. And you've got to really think very carefully about the sort of stuff that you're writing. And it's hard, but that's why agents and publishers are actually quite good, because they knew.
Well,
they could say, yes, it's you, or no, it's not.
Yeah. Well,
it's tricky.
Well, given the subject matter of the Thursday Next novels, as you said, the kind of meditation on story and novels and reading, what do you think about e-publishing? I mean, obviously, as you
go ahead. It's brilliant. I mean, e-publishing, you know, a book is a book. It doesn't matter if, you know, if you were to paint it on a wall or, you know, or write it on a lizard, you know, it doesn't matter. It's all stories. The medium does not matter. So, you know, e-publishing, it's still just books. You know, speaking personally, I love paper. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's just me because I'm kind of getting on a bit. But for people, you know, people, you know, perhaps in their, you know, late teens or early 20s now who are growing up with reading stuff on devices, of course, devices look, there's nothing wrong with devices at all. So, yeah, e-publishing, there's nothing wrong with it, I think. But it's going to be tricky as it finds its feet.
Sure.
Because there has to be a way in which, you know, you know, people will say, okay, this is what you should read, this is what you shouldn't, this is what's recommended, and this is what isn't. And it's difficult to be heard. You know, the more ways in which we find to speak, you know, the harder it is to be heard. So it's difficult. But it goes back to what I said previously. It's quality. Quality, quality, quality. That is what will always rise to the top when it comes to writing. And try and shrug off that the specter of self-delusion and say to yourself really seriously, okay, is this working as a book? And you sort of stare at it for a while and read your first chapter, read your first paragraph, read your first sentence, thinking, is it working? And that's really, I mean, all you can do really, write good books.
Sure. So speaking of that, what are you writing now? Have you started working on another novel?
Yeah, at the moment I'm working. I have a series, a young adult series going called The Last Dragon Slayer. Just been published here in the US. And I've written number two. That's out in the UK. And I've got to write number three. So that's the one I'm looking at the moment. And that will hopefully be finished by the end of the year. And then I've got I'm a bit cramped really, but I'm meant to be doing about 1.5 books next year, so it's going to be quite a busy year.
So where can people find you online?
Sorry?
Where can people find you online?
Oh, jasperford.com. Jasper, you know, JASPER, and then Ford is FFORDE. So all one word, jasperford.com. My very, very old-fashioned website, which is a completely 100% author-generated website. There's not a single scrap of text anywhere in it that has not been put together by myself or my wife. And there's tons of stuff there that you can look at. There are special features. There are all kinds of how I wrote the book. Because I always think, you know, DVDs, you get the special features. I thought, I can do that. So about 7 or 8 years ago, I started doing special features for my books, and you can just have a look at deleted scenes, and you can see why they were deleted, because they weren't very good, or they were boring, or they didn't progress the story. So, yeah, there's a lot on there, and for anyone who is perhaps, you know, wanting to write or, you know, having a think about it, again, there's some stuff there about writing as well.
Great. And I'll have a link to that in the show notes so that people can look at as well.
Okay, that'd be brilliant.
Well, again, we've been speaking with Jasper Ford, the author of the Thursday Next novels and also The Last Dragon Slayer, as he just mentioned. His latest book, The Woman Who Died a Lot, the latest Thursday Next novel, is available in bookstores now. You should check it out. Jasper, thanks for doing the interview.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.